Hello, my name's David Burns of the Assessment Register, and welcome to our podcasts. Today, we're going to be discussing internal auditing and what you need to have in place to become an internal auditor. The main focus of attention for this podcast is, in fact, on ISO 9001 or AS9100 quality management systems, but equally, it can be applied to laboratories, environmental standards, and health and safety standards. The whole idea of internal auditing is, in fact, to set down methodology of how to run through an organisation to check for compliance. We've broken this podcast into five sessions, the first one being development of auditing concepts, the second one being the auditor, the character and the selection of the correct auditor, the third, the audit itself, what to look at, what to look for, the fourth, auditor skills, getting the right information from those individuals that you're discussing the management system with, or how to review procedures effectively. And finally, how to report the audit. That's the five sessions. However, before we delve into the finer details, let's just consider a few areas to have in mind to clear our conscience of everything else and just focus on the job in hand, internal auditing. First of all, we just simply need to make sure the quality management system is planned and it's structured in an auditable way. Next, is it integrated? I mean, does it cover all areas of the business? Where does the management system start? Where does the management system end? Basically, what's the scope of what it is we're trying to audit? Production planning. If you have production facilities within the organisation, they tend to be quite detailed, quite robust, and normally very well documented. But just double check, familiarise yourself with those production areas just before you start to do the auditing. Supply chain. Looking at procurement and the supply chain. Approved suppliers. How do we assess those suppliers? Looking at products that are delivered into the business. And again, that's all part of the audit process. Try and familiarise yourself with the actual product and the product range as well within the organisation, just to get an idea of how much we have to delve into product safety, product measurement, product compliance generally in terms of aesthetics. So just get a feel for that product. Is it software? Is it hardware? And so on. Okay. Then also look at the bigger picture, the commercial objectives of the organisation. Is it running parallel, for example, with the quality management system? For example, many companies will run a finance system, a financial-based IT system, such as Sage or QuickBooks for stock control and production planning. And is that an integral part of the quality management system? I mean, is it all documented together? And last but not least is business continuity. Have we a disaster recovery plan? And how does the quality management system information and data feed into that disaster recovery plan? So, here we go. Session one. Firstly, what is an internal audit? Well, simply ensuring that we are doing what we say and plan to do to compare working practice with procedures and records and also to improve operational performance. Basically, your internal audit is a risk assessment. It's a risk assessment of the whole organisation. The simple definition is an independent review to compare working practice with documented procedures, with consideration to product, of course, and contract compliance. Now, just to clarify from the outset, let's identify terms and definitions associated with auditing. The first one, the first example, is first-party auditing. That's you auditing your organisation internally. So that's first-party auditing, otherwise known as internal auditing. The next one is second-party auditing. That's you auditing your supply chain or your customers coming to audit you. So there's two people involved, second-party auditing. The third, that's the certification body's role. That's third-party auditing. Now that's the certification body coming to visit you. They've been appointed by UCAS or another accreditation body to audit industry and commerce. Third-party certification bodies, of course, are invited by you into your organisation, and they come and visit you because you've asked them to, and they come and audit you because you've asked them to, probably because of a contract that you have to have, or you've decided as a company policy we're going to go for third-party certification. So that's the three types of auditing: internal, supply chain, third-party assessments. Next, we have to consider types of auditing, i.e. types of internal auditing. Well, the first one is system auditing to verify that procedure processes comply with stated requirements, i.e. are you working as per procedure? And then you have compliance auditing, again, an internal thing, where you're looking at your compliance against contractual or legal obligations, or of course against the standard, to make sure that your management system complies with the standard and the contract. The next one is performance auditing. Again, internal performance auditing. Just because we have a procedure, it doesn't mean to say that procedure is any good. For example, if a poorly documented procedure is implemented and adopted and then worked to by management and staff, it could be just replicating poor working practice. So as auditors, we're trying to improve process, we're trying to improve procedures all the time. For those with AS9100, the aerospace standard, there is a thing called PAERS, Process Effectiveness Assessment Records or Assessment Reporting. Now, the PAERS are normally the domain of the certification body. However, as internal auditors, we will just double check to make sure that our PAERS are effective and appropriate. Now, we have another podcast about PAERS, so you can dig out that one and have a read about PAERS later. As we said from the outset, why do we audit and what standards are there that we audit against? Well, again, we've got ISO 9001, we've got AS9100, we've got ISO 17025 for laboratories, and even certification bodies have to have internal auditing against their standards, 17021, 17065, and so on. These are all certification body standards that have to be audited. The point being, you're not alone. Just because you're working for a company with ISO 9001 doing internal auditing, remember, the guys that come and visit you to audit you also have to do internal auditing. Basically, the people that come and visit you, they get it, okay? They understand what you're going through, so they understand what you need to be doing to make sure you comply to the standard. So, this is the end of session one. So, just have a bit of a recap here. Have a little think about what's the benefit of internal auditing. What's the benefit of second party supply chain auditing, and what is the benefit of third party certification body auditing? Have a little think about the different approaches that all three of those areas of audit have in common and how they bounce off each other to make the supply chain throughout the quality management system process work effectively. Now for session number two. This is all about the auditor, the individual, the character, the selection of that person. However, before we delve into this session, I just wanted to remind you that there is a free Kindle book that runs parallel with this podcast. It's called The Internal Auditor. It's a book on Amazon that you can just download either as a hard copy, but the Kindle copy is free, and it runs parallel with most of what you're listening to within this podcast. Okay. Back to this course subject, the requirements. So the requirements are the person, the auditor, the internal auditor should be trained. They should be independent of the area being audited. They should have authorization to proceed with the audit. And they should have good reporting skills, which is absolutely key. Okay, from the top, pretty much anyone can audit. Okay, that's the thing to remember. Don't hold back. Anyone can audit. Anyone can do internal auditing. The main thing is they should be trained, i.e. trained against a methodology, as per this podcast, for example. When you're auditing a specific industry sector that requires technical competence, i.e. aerospace, defence projects, science, research, chemical laboratories and so on, then of course there's going to be massive benefit for those individuals that are undertaking that level of auditing to have experience within that particular sector. However, within many quality management systems, there will be softer areas that pretty much anyone can audit because they're looking at working practice against procedure and they're just looking for gaps to see whether we comply or don't comply. If you're moving into more technical areas, then of course you'd expect to have a more technically competent and experienced auditor. As with all audits, and I'll emphasise this throughout this podcast, it's all about competence and experience, but mainly independence of the area being audited. So you're the height of impartiality. There's no conflicts of interest. So you're auditing a department that you've got a fresh pair of eyes. You're looking at what's going on in this department. Does it comply? When you're being audited by your certification body or even your customer, they'll be looking at other things as well, mind. They'll be looking at you. You will be under the spotlight as the internal auditor. They will check your training. They will check your methodology and your approach to reporting. They're certainly going to look at the report content and also the authorization that you've been permitted to undertake that audit at that particular level. Okay, so we'll come on to that later as well. But ultimately, as an auditor, you will be audited. The selection of the auditor, let's have a little think about this. So we're looking for a person that has integrity. We're looking for someone that has experience and that they're competent and they have the diligence to move the audit forward. So the integrity side, someone that's mature, open-minded, have sound judgment, analytical and technical skills. They understand complex issues and have those conversations and discussions with the auditee. But also the ability to perceive a situation realistically and not take things out of context, and also remain focused on the contract obligation and, of course, the standard. Experience and competence. Again, that reigns. That's important. So appropriate workplace experience, although, as I said earlier, not absolutely necessary depending on the level of audit and the area of auditing, but also have a management system understanding. So have a picture and a bigger picture of the organization, understand business concepts, understand what the organization wants from the audit. So these sorts of things are very important. Likewise, I always make a recommendation to all auditors, look, have a read of the previous audit reports as well for that particular department. Get a feel for what's going on. As with all walks of life, communication is key. Being diplomatic is key. Again, being tactful, judging significance and identifying priorities is a key attribute for any auditor. Remain true to the purpose of the audit, remain focused, and try and concentrate on the scope of the audit, the area that you've been tasked to review. Summarising this first session, the things you're going to be looking at: comply with the audit procedures, carry out the assigned tasks, i.e. what you've started to do, make sure you conclude, record any observations, make notes, write everything down, or even mark up copies of the procedure itself, just to have some sort of history and background to the areas that you've just audited. Report the findings, but also have a conversation with the department, with the auditee first, before you start writing up your reports, just so that you've got a full understanding of the picture. But also, as internal auditors, unlike third-party auditors, internal auditors, first-party auditors, you are permitted to make recommendations and suggest corrective actions, if you wish, and have that conversation, and report that information as well, because that's key. Because the whole idea, remember, as internal auditors, you're almost like mini consultants. You are allowed to provide advice and stimulate debate and have those conversations with the department. Now, that's completely different to third-party certification body auditors, where they're not permitted under their accreditation standard to offer advice. They can only raise issues. So that's one of the huge benefits of internal auditing. You can actually make recommendations. Bringing this first session to a close, I mean, I always ask these questions. I mean, would you be a good auditor? Okay, that's the question. You've got to ask yourself this. So listening to this podcast, one of the things you've got to ask yourself is, would I make a good auditor? Okay. And if not, if you're tasked with selecting an auditor, what type of auditor are you looking for? Okay, what people make the best auditors? I mean, who do you think around you would make a good auditor? And how can you demonstrate their competence or your competence as an auditor? Now we're delving into session number 3, the actual audit, where to look and what to look for. As stated previously, before we delve into the audit itself, we need to plan and prepare the audit. So the first thing we're going to do is look at the audit program. We need to prepare a risk prioritized audit program or audit schedule. Okay, that's the first thing. The next thing, that program needs to be approved by someone. So a senior member of the management team will need to approve your audit program. Assign the auditor, if it's not yourself, of course, and if you've got a team of auditors, then you need to plan their time into the audit. Contact the department or the individual that's going to be audited. Now, give them the heads up. Now, you can either send them a copy of the audit plan in advance, of course, or you can just ping them a memo or an email just to say, look, don't forget, we're coming to audit you next week, so make sure you've got things ready, okay? So then review the previous audit reports. Now, it's important to do that before you start auditing, just to get a feel for what's been looked at the last time around, so that you don't duplicate. Okay, so you're looking at different areas of a department each time. Always read the procedures. Make sure that the procedures you have are up to date, and just simply make sure that what you're reading and reviewing is in tune with what that particular department you're going to be auditing has also in place. Okay, so you could even use that time when you're reading the procedures to prepare a checklist of questions. Personally speaking, I like to have a fresh checklist before any audit rather than using a standard checklist. I think sometimes standard checklists, you can miss things. They're too constraining. Okay. But again, we'll come on to that shortly. So also consider the objectives of the audit. I mean, what are we actually going to be looking at? What's the scope? Are we going to look at the whole department or just a section of the department? Are we focusing on a product or are we focusing on a particular team area? So you need to just consider the scope and also the time. Timing's key. I mean, how much time are you giving yourselves to do this audit as well? Because that's obviously key. So the audit plan from the outset, consider the objectives of the audit. What's the scope of the audit? What are the most appropriate areas of this particular department we want to be looking at? So we're going to decide the remit of ourselves for the audit and of course colleagues and also the people we're going to be asking. Who are we going to be talking to? That's key. We need to be asking the right people the right questions. And as I indicated earlier, agree a timetable of interviews. What you don't want to be doing is giving yourself 3 or 4 hours to do an audit when you're going to rush at the last minute. I mean, that's no good to anybody. I always say try and divide it into three. So the first hour, if you're going to use a 3-hour plan, the first hour, preparation. The second hour, the actual focus of the audit, asking the questions, what to look at, what to look for, who you're going to speak to and so on. And then the last hour, you're going to be summarising and writing up your report. As a part of your audit planning as well, you're going to be looking at audit frequency. I mean, how often are we going to audit a particular department? Is it going to be an annual basis? Is it going to be a quarterly basis? So when you look at your audit planning and your audit programme or your audit schedule, whatever you decide you want to call this plan, is you need to decide exactly how often you're going to audit certain areas and functions. Because, you know, don't think you're going to audit just everything once per year. You may decide, you know what, calibration's been a bit of a pain recently. Let's look at calibration on a quarterly basis because it's always the one that gives us grief when we do our root cause analysis. Or you may have some new processes in place or some new plant and equipment. Then if so, you may decide you want to audit these areas more often just to make sure they're bedded in, just to make sure the systems and processes around that new plant and equipment is actually fit for purpose and actually is effective and you don't need changes. Most quality management systems simply ask you to audit everything at least once a year. So that's the general rule. But remember, you can add other areas to audit as you wish based on risk. Okay, now the audit team. Now, before we kick off, of course, we need to just check the availability of the auditors. If you're going to do a plan and you have your plan and it's all risk prioritized, you've got everything sorted, you know which departments and functions you're going to be looking at, now you need to build the team. So check the availability of the team. When you have the team selected, just brief them. Brief the auditors prior to the audit. Define the scope of the audit so the auditors know exactly where their starting point is and where they're supposed to be ending. Identify any special requirements within the area that they're going to be auditing and then simply assign the area to be audited. So just to recap, a summary now of what we're going to be looking at. The audit plan with dates and times and the location and the area to be audited. Then contact the department manager or department supervisor and simply say, right, this is the type of documentation we're after. This is the sort of thing we're going to be looking at. What we're going to do as well is try and have an opening meeting with a member of staff or two as well, just to kick the audit off. We're also going to be asking about any special controls, any personal protective equipment we may need, i.e. protective clothing, safety glasses, any security issues or any occupational exposure levels, the dust or fume that we may have to consider. Okay, so you're basically trying to get your ducks in a row, if you like, before you delve into the audit. It's always extremely useful as well to have a pre-audit familiarisation visit of the area just to familiarise yourself with what's what and who's who. And if you don't fully understand those particular processes in that department, you can get a feel for it just by, as I say, familiarising yourself with the area and the people. Introduce yourself, bit of etiquette, really good. Now we're starting to delve into the audit. So we're going to follow the operational processes as they're defined in procedure processes. We'll be following our checklist to make sure that everything runs smoothly and the documentation that flows between departments and functions work well. So you're looking at an audit trail. What comes into the department, what flows through the department, how that documentation is handled, what processes are there to comply or not comply. You highlight any performance indicators as you'd expect. Okay, so it's all about information flow, information and data flow that supports the product or service that's being processed through that particular department. So we're looking at information and data flow. To help us on our way, of course, we're going to have our checklist or our marked up procedure. That is normally a good indicator of making sure you stay on track. It provides the auditor with a framework, and it also ensures that all areas of the audit are being audited, in fact, and it helps your memory, because sometimes when you're in the audit and you're discussing topics with members of the department team, you can sometimes become distracted. So the checklist is a good aide memoir, keeps you focused. Okay. And as I said earlier, quite often, my checklists are often copies, uncontrolled copies, I must point out, of marked up procedures that I've looked at before the audit, just to get myself into the groove, if you like, of auditing that particular department. When we're undertaking the audit, of course, there's key areas to consider always: personnel, documentation, records, equipment, and process interfaces, as we touched on earlier, that information flow. But within the information flow, of course, generally, we have people. What are their responsibilities? What training have they had? How competent are they at their particular job? So again, you can start to look at all this stuff, if you so wish, if that's in the scope, if that's what you've decided from the outset, okay? And when it comes to personnel, you might decide, actually, you know what, we'll audit personnel separately and look at training skills matrices later into the audit. Documentation and data, records, are they adequate? Is all the documentation identified? Are they to the correct issue? And how available are they to staff for undertaking the job? Okay. The equipment, is it well maintained? Is it identified? What's its capability? What happens to wastage from this particular department? And of course, as we said previously, it's the process interfaces, the inputs and the outputs, the data and information flow that run parallel with the products and services that run through the department. Is everyone working to the procedures and work instructions and methodologies as applied to that department? If not already, it's time for you to go and have a quick cup of tea or coffee or a glass of water, because, as we've always said, internal auditing isn't exactly the most fun-packed listen, okay? So have a break, have a cup of tea. Okay, now back into auditing etiquette. Well, just to summarise, opening meeting with the department, tour of the area is normally a good idea, just to familiarise yourself with the department, undertake the audit when you're ready, and then, of course, have a closing meeting. Always have a closing meeting. The closing meeting is for you to have that bit of a recap session with the department manager, department supervisor, briefly discuss the audit results, discuss matters requiring urgent attention, things that you think, actually, if this is not sorted, is going to be a bit of a problem here. Discuss matters requiring further review because you're not sure about something, so you're going to discuss it with them first, and then raise any observations for consideration. And remember, you are allowed to make recommendations, okay, because you're doing internal auditing, so you can have those conversations. Not to make the final decision, but you can certainly bounce ideas, and that's important. And then, of course, explain to the individual responsible for the department how you're going to report your report, okay, because that's important. Okay, now that's the end of session 3. Now, just to recap, as I say, you've basically completed the audit. You've got all the documentation you need. You've started to draw up your notes and make recommendations and have that closing meeting with the department. Now, moving into session number 4, this is all about auditor skills now. Okay, so the auditor skills, what makes you a good auditor going forward? However, it's just time to have a bit of a recap here and have a think. What don't we like about internal auditing? Well, you will be ridiculed. People don't always like internal auditing, okay? You will be given a hard time. People will moan and groan, and they'll often see it as a waste of time. It's a threat to their department. It's a bureaucratic exercise. It's promoting a blame culture. And they see you as just collecting data just for the sake of it. However, you need to put them right, because ultimately, auditing is an opportunity to improve working practice, procedures and processes. And it also provides management with objective feedback. You are only reporting the facts, and you're reporting information and data back to the management team to make decisions. So it actually relies on your input to improve business processes. Okay. It also confirms if new initiatives that have recently been implemented are actually being complied with. Okay, so that's another thing to consider as well. Now, it also confirms compliance against contract, customer contracts, and also legal obligations that you may have within that particular department. So you're cross-checking to make sure customer contracts are being adhered with, as well as legal obligations are being complied with. And basically, it ensures compliance against the overall business objectives. So, all in all, there's more benefits than pitfalls with doing internal auditing. As auditors, we have to be true to ourselves, and we all know there are different characters that undertake different types of auditing. You've got assertive people, passive people, and aggressive people. The thing is, going right back to our selection of the auditor, we need to make sure we've got the right characters on board. So during the selection process, our auditors are best served if they have a slightly assertive behaviour, i.e. they stand up for their own rights, they don't violate the rights of others because they're diplomatic and generally calm, they express themselves in an appropriate way because they're being polite, they're being direct but at the same time honest because they're professional, and they're aiming to satisfy the wants and needs of all parties. So that's the type of character we're looking for as far as internal audits are concerned. Basically, we're looking for someone who's a good listener, understands reason, able to debate, and communicates very well. On the subject of our auditing skills, how do we start? Well, the first thing to do is interview the right people. So when we develop our checklist of audits, it's also important to make sure that we've got the right people on the list to have these conversations with during the audit process. And then, of course, we're going to obtain information and we'll be taking notes the whole time. So discuss with people, ask people questions, listen to what they're saying, and then take notes. Notes are absolutely key to this because they underpin your final report. When we're obtaining information, we just simply need to ask the question about the task, observe and watch the task being done, and check, just confirm what was done, what was said, complies with the procedures and the working methods, and then of course record and report and note any observations that you've made against what you've just observed. Throughout this podcast, it's actually easy for me to sit here and actually explain, but the best way of actually getting to do this internal auditing stuff is to actually go out and do it and just practice and practice, okay? You can listen to podcasts all day long, you can sit on training courses, but at the end of the day, going out and doing an audit and then having that audit report reviewed by a peer or a member of the management team, but ultimately by the third party certification body auditor, you can't beat it. They are the ones that will tell you whether it's good enough or not, okay? So the proof that you're a good auditor will be the proof that you've achieved certification and that the certification body auditor is happy with your report. Always remember that. And that all comes with practice. Okay, back to talking to our people in the department that we're just auditing. So, open questions. An open question will encourage a person to talk. So, for example, how is this process monitored? How is this information recorded? That will give you information immediately back that you need to make note again. The only downside, of course, with open questions is the person you're auditing may not actually stop talking. Okay, so you lose a certain amount of control with open questions. As auditors, always have in mind Rudyard Kipling. I kept 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I know. Their names are what, where, when, why, and who. And of course, we throw this one in, show me the records, and then I'll record it. So this approach is probing questions. Probing questions are used as follow-up questions. They're designed to search for more information. And it's the cornerstone of good auditing. So always use probing questions. Always follow up with another question, just to clarify a position. Closed questions provide specific information, i.e. do you have a work instruction? But this can be answered with a simple yes or no. So you need to use closed questions sparingly. Then there are the counterproductive questions that we can all fall into the trap of, okay? And these are multiple questions where you're bombarding the poor fella with too many questions all at once, trick questions, leading questions, and of course, ambiguous questions where you're trying to pull a flanker, so to speak, and not be straight, okay? So, with the different types of questioning to one side, now we just consider other things like behaviour patterns, behaviour of the auditor. First and foremost, be on time. Be punctual. Remember, latecomers are never taken seriously. And of course, avoid arguing with people. Be objective and respect confidentiality. And try and be respectful, which I'm sure you are anyway. I don't know why I'm saying try and be respectful. Just be respectful, okay? And complete all the tasks. I mean, when we say complete all the tasks, just look at the input, look at the activity, and look at the output. And then just cross-check that with your procedure processes and the working practice. I'm just going to throw you a bit of an example here, but there is an example in the workbook that you'll have, which we touched on earlier, is available as a free Kindle from Amazon. You need to search for the internal auditor book, and it should pop up under the name of David Burns. Here is a typical list of questions that you may ask during an audit, and this is aimed at a stores or stock control area. Okay, so this is a series of questions that you'll ask the department. Where is the procedure for material receipt and how is it identified? What happens to damaged or suspect counterfeit products on arrival? How are they reported? How are product shortages recorded and resolved? How are products tracked through to product storage bin locations? Who is responsible for accepting products, and at the same time, who is responsible for releasing products? What is the system for identification and traceability? How is a product with a use-by date controlled? And if you receive certificates of conformity or material certs and other documentation with a product, how is this information recorded into the premises and then stored or communicated? So that's a typical list of questions that you would prepare if you were going to audit a stores area. Okay. Now we're moving into the last session, session number 5, and this is all about reporting the audit, how to present the case, and how to report the details of your audit. Firstly, of course, you're going to have that conversation with the department manager, department supervisor, just to make sure that you're in agreement with the findings, okay, just to have an understanding of what you're going to report and how you're going to come up with solutions to solve any issues that need addressing. Okay. Of course, as internal auditors, we're not really raising non-conformances. We can only really raise a series of issues and any action necessary as a result of those issues. Certification bodies and customers will, of course, raise non-conformances when they come and visit. And some organisations, i.e. some certification bodies, tend to use the term major and minor. Okay, so just run through those quickly. A major, not complying with procedures, there's a clear and serious impact on product integrity, product safety, and the business as a whole. A major can also be a complete breakdown of the system where something's been completely ignored or disregarded that the standard actually asks as a must do. Okay, so that's your majors. They're normally complete breakdowns. Okay. Minors, well, these tend to be things like they're usually undertaken but temporarily forgotten, a document not completed fully or filed correctly, a record not completed as perhaps the procedure has asked you to complete. So you can generally put these in the minor category. But as I said earlier, on internal auditing, it's a different ball game. You're raising issues, you're highlighting issues, you're stimulating debate, you're writing something down for the record, and then agreeing how to actually improve the process, improve the department, and then comply to working practice. So if you do find an issue, you're simply saying to yourself, okay, I need to record this problem. I need to now contain this problem. I need to look at anything else that may impact on that problem. I need to look at the root cause. I need to consider containment in the bigger picture, down the supply chain, through to the customer or other departments. I also need to consider what corrective action should be introduced to remove the problem in total. But we're going to have that conversation as a group. Department manager, department heads of departments, and so on and so forth. Okay. When you do highlight an issue that needs to be recorded, obviously you're going to be looking at the root cause, but you're having that conversation, as I said earlier, with the department. So how significant is the issue? You're going to do a bit of an impact assessment between yourselves. Is it a long-term issue or is it a short-term issue? Is it down to culture and work ethic rather than procedure processes or equipment? Is it to do with the customer? Is it to do with a customer escape, i.e. something's been released to the customer too soon? Is it a supply chain issue? Is it to do with customer suppliers and contracts? Is it to do with procedures and work instructions? Or, of course, is it to do with personnel? Is it to do with training? Have you got the wrong people on that particular job, or have they just not been trained properly? The point being, you're going to highlight the issue, and then in your report, you're going to write a bit of a story of where you believe the problem originated, and then present the case to the management team. Okay, so you're going to present the case now, because ultimately the managers need to know what's going on. As we said previously, the auditor is not necessarily responsible for the corrective action, and certainly not necessarily responsible for the longer term preventive action, and certainly not necessarily solely responsible for identifying the root cause. That's going to be down to departmental managers and supervisors, the quality management representative for the business, and other nominated technicians within the organisation may need to start looking at it and taking ownership for the issue. The fact is, a true root cause and analysis is only as good as the team. So you, depending on the nature of the issue, would depend on the nature of the team involved and drilling down, finding the problem, finding the solution, implementing corrective action. And then, of course, as auditors, you need to follow up to ensure that any corrective action is actually effective and working correctly. Okay, we're coming to the close of this podcast. The point being, at the end of the day, don't look for problems that don't exist. Positive auditing is a good thing. Don't feel there's always going to be an issue. Don't feel there's always going to be an angle. Don't feel there's always going to be a problem. So don't look for problems that are non-existent. If a department is good, report it. If it's excellent, say so. Praise good practice and report well-motivated staff. That's all part of the audit reporting. Not just raising issues, not just being negative, but raising a good story and reporting a good story. Over the years, we've highlighted a series of common issues that are raised almost within all organisations. They crop up time and time again, and quite often it's a lack of documented procedures, unauthorised working practice, records not being completed correctly, poor evaluation of root cause against an internal issue that may be raised, audits not being completed properly, audits not being completed as per planned. And also, when they have identified issues, there's no trend analysis. So it's important when we're doing audit reporting to see whether we can identify trends over the years, whether there's any recurring issues throughout the wider organisation of issues that need to be dealt with, because there's something fundamental that's bubbling to the surface that's constantly causing the same things to reoccur year on year, audit on audit. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening. And just to recap, we've had 5 sessions: developing the audit concepts, all about the auditor, the character involved with that particular individual, the selection of the audit itself and how to report the audit, and then longer term audit skills, getting the right information from the right people, and then reporting the audit. How do we report the audit? How do we highlight issues? And then how do we solve the issues by follow-up audits, corrective actions, and further improvement? And one last thing I'd like to say, you'll find that if you've got a new quality management system, you'll find that your internal audits will report issues quite regularly in the early days. However, as time goes on, don't be alarmed that you're not finding any issues. Don't be alarmed that you do actually have a complying system. Because ultimately, remember, we're looking for compliance, not necessarily issues associated with the business. We're not constantly seeking out an angle. So don't feel guilty. Don't feel any guilt or remorse if you're not raising issues. If you identify that you've got no issues to raise, write that into the report. Report simply what you've looked at, who you've spoken to, and as I said earlier, praise good practice. All of the aforementioned is wrapped up in the Internal Auditor book, which is that Kindle we keep telling you about, that's available on Amazon free of charge. As well as listening to all of this stuff, you can actually sit and recap the book, which is quite comprehensive. It covers everything you need. Okay, thank you very much.